Side 6, Disclosure by Michael Crichton. Continuing on page 240.
I kept trying to make light of it, Meredith continued, to make jokes to get free. I was trying to say to him, "Oh, come on, Tom, let's not do this." But he was determined. And when he tore my underwear off, when I heard the sound of the cloth ripping, I realized that I could not get out of this situation in any diplomatic way. I had to acknowledge that Mr. Sanders was raping me, and I became very scared and very angry. When he moved away from me on the couch to free his penis from his trousers, prior to penetration, I kneed him in the groin. He rolled off the couch onto the floor. Then he got to his feet, and I got to my feet. Mr. Sanders was angry that I had refused his advances. He started shouting at me, and then he hit me, knocking me down onto the floor. But by then I was angry, too. I remember saying, "You can't do this to me," and swearing at him. But I can't say I remember everything that he said or that I said. He came back at me one more time, but by then I had my shoes in my hand, and I hit him in the chest with my high heels, trying to drive him away. I think I tore his shirt, I'm not sure. I was so angry by then I wanted to kill him. I'm sure I scratched him. I remember I said I wanted to kill him. I was so angry. Here it was, my first day in this new job. I was under so much pressure. I was trying to do a good job, and this thing had happened that ruined our relationship and was going to cause a lot of trouble for everybody in the company. He went off in an angry rage. After he left, the question for me was how to handle it. She paused, shaking her head, apparently lost in the emotions of that moment. Heller said gently, "How did you decide to handle it?" "Well, it's a problem. Tom's an important employee, and he is not an easy person to replace. Furthermore, in my judgment, it would not be wise to make a replacement in the middle of the acquisition. My first impulse was to see if we could forget the whole thing. After all, we're both adults. I was personally embarrassed, but I thought that Tom would probably be embarrassed, too, when he sobered up and had a chance to think it over. And I thought that maybe we could just go on from there. After all, awkward things happen sometimes. People can overlook them." So when the meeting time changed, I called his house to tell him. He wasn't there, but I had a very pleasant conversation with his wife. It was clear from our conversation that she did not know that Tom had been meeting me, or that Tom and I knew each other from the past. Anyway, I gave his wife the new meeting time and asked her to tell Tom. The next day at the meeting, things did not go well. Tom showed up late and changed his story about the Twinkle Drive, minimizing the problems and contradicting me. He was clearly undercutting my authority in a corporate meeting, and I could not permit that. I went directly to Phil Blackburn and told him everything that had happened. I said I did not want to press formal charges, but I made it clear that I could not work with Tom, and that a change would have to be made. Phil said he would talk to Tom, and eventually it was decided that we would try to mediate a resolution. She sat back and placed her hands flat on the table. "That's all, I think. That's everything." She looked around at everyone, meeting their eyes in turn. Very cool, very controlled. It was a spectacular performance, and in Sanders it produced a quite unexpected effect. He felt guilty. He felt as if he had done the things that she said he had done. He felt sudden shame and looked down at the table, hanging his head. Fernandez kicked him in the ankle hard. He jerked his head up, wincing. She was frowning at him. He sat up. Judge Murphy cleared her throat. "Evidently," she said, "we are presented with two entirely incompatible reports. Miss Johnson, I have only a few questions before we go on."
"Yes, Your Honor."
"You're an attractive woman. I'm sure you've had to fend off your share of unwanted approaches in the course of your business career." Meredith smiled.
"Yes, Your Honor."
"And I'm sure you have developed some skill at it."
"Yes, Your Honor."
"You've said you were aware of tensions from your past relationship with Mr. Sanders. Considering those tensions, I would have thought that a meeting held in the middle of the day, without wine, would have been more professional, would have set a better tone."
"I'm sure that's correct in hindsight," Meredith said. "But at the time, this was all in the context of the acquisition meetings. Everybody was busy. I was just trying to fit the meeting with Mr. Sanders in before the Conley White sessions the next day. That's all I was thinking about. Schedules."
"I see. And after Mr. Sanders left your office, why didn't you call Mr. Blackburn or someone else in the company to report what had happened?
As I said, I was hoping it could all be overlooked.
Yet the episode you describe, Murphy said, is a serious breach of normal business behavior. As an experienced manager, you must have known the chance of a good working relationship with Mr. Sanders was nil. I would have thought you'd feel obliged to report what happened to a superior at once. And from a practical standpoint, I would have thought you'd want to go on record as soon as possible.
As I said, I was still hoping.
She frowned, thinking.
You know, I guess I felt responsible for Tom. As an old friend, I didn't want to be the reason why he lost his job.
On the other hand, you are the reason why he lost his job.
Yes, again, in hindsight.
I see. All right. Ms. Fernandez?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Fernandez turned in her chair to face Johnson.
Ms. Johnson, in a situation like this, when private behavior occurs behind closed doors, we need to look at surrounding events where we can. So I'll ask you a few questions about surrounding events.
Fine.
You've said that when you made the appointment with Mr. Sanders, he requested wine.
Yes.
Where did the wine come from that you drank that night?
I asked my assistant to get it.
This is Ms. Ross?
Yes.
She's been with you a long time?
Yes.
She came up with you from Cupertino?
Yes.
She is a trusted employee?
Yes.
How many bottles did you ask Ms. Ross to buy?
I don't remember if I specified a particular number.
All right. How many bottles did she get?
3, I think.
3. And did you ask your assistant to buy anything else?
Like what?
Did you ask her to buy condoms?
No.
Do you know if she bought condoms?
No, I don't.
In fact, she did. She bought condoms from the Second Avenue drugstore.
Well, if she bought condoms, Johnson said, it must have been for herself.
Do you know of any reason why your assistant would say she bought the condoms for you?
No, Johnson said, speaking slowly. She was thinking it over.
I can't imagine she would do that.
Just a moment, Murphy said, interrupting. Ms. Fernandez, are you alleging that the assistant did say that she bought the condoms for Ms. Johnson?
Yes, Your Honor, we are.
You have a witness to that effect?
Yes, we do.
Sitting beside Johnson, Heller rubbed the bottom of his lip with one finger. Johnson showed no reaction at all. She didn't even blink. She just continued to gaze calmly at Fernandez, waiting for the next question.
Ms. Johnson, did you instruct your assistant to lock the door to your office when Mr. Sanders was with you?
I most certainly did not.
Do you know if she locked the door?
No, I don't.
Do you know why she would tell someone that you ordered her to lock the door?
No.
Ms. Johnson, your meeting with Mr. Sanders was at 6 o'clock. Did you have any appointments later that day?
No, his was the last.
Isn't it true that you had a 7 o'clock appointment that you canceled?
Oh, yes, that's true. I had one with Stephanie Kaplan, but I canceled it because I wasn't going to have the figures ready for her to go over. There wasn't time to prepare.
Are you aware that your assistant told Ms. Kaplan that you were canceling because you had another meeting that was going to run late?
I don't know what my assistant said to her, Meredith replied, showing impatience for the first time.
We seem to be talking a great deal about my assistant. Perhaps you should be asking her these questions.
Perhaps we should. I'm sure it can be arranged.
All right. Let's turn to something else. Mr. Sanders said he saw a cleaning woman when he left your office. Did you also see her?
No. I stayed in my office after he had gone.
The cleaning woman, Marion Walden, says she overheard a loud argument prior to Mr. Sanders' departure. She says she heard a man say, "This isn't a good idea. I don't want to do this." And she heard a woman say, "You fucking bastard, you can't leave me like this." Do you recall saying anything like that?
No. I recall saying,
You can't do this to me.
But you don't recall saying, you can't leave me like this.
No, I do not.
Miss Walden is quite clear that was what you said.
I don't know what Miss Walden thought she heard, Johnson said. The doors were closed the entire time.
Weren't you speaking quite loudly?
I don't know, possibly.
Miss Walden said you were shouting, and Mr. Sanders has said you were shouting.
I don't know.
All right. Now, Miss Johnson, you said that you informed Mr. Blackburn that you could not work with Mr. Sanders after the unfortunate Tuesday morning meeting. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Sanders sat forward. He suddenly realized that he had overlooked that while Meredith was making her original statement. He had been so upset he hadn't realized that she had lied about when she saw Blackburn. Because Sanders had gone to Blackburn's office right after the meeting, and Blackburn already knew.
Miss Johnson, what time would you say you went to see Mr. Blackburn?
I don't know. After the meeting.
About what time?
10 o'clock.
Not earlier?
No.
Sanders glanced over at Blackburn, who sat rigidly at the end of the table. He looked tense and bit his lip. Fernandez said,
Shall I ask Mr. Blackburn to confirm that? I imagine his assistant has a log, if he has difficulty with exact memory.
There was a short silence. She looked over at Blackburn.
No,
Meredith said.
No, I was confused. What I meant to say was I talked to Phil after the initial meeting, and before the second meeting.
The initial meeting being the one at which Sanders was absent?
The 8 o'clock meeting.
Yes.
So Mr. Sanders's behavior at the second meeting, where he contradicted you, could not have been relevant to your decision to speak to Mr. Blackburn, because you had already spoken to Mr. Blackburn by the time that meeting took place.
As I say, I was confused.
I have no more questions of this witness, Your Honor. Judge Murphy closed her notepad. Her expression was bland and unreadable. She looked at her watch. It's now 11:30. We will break for lunch for 2 hours. I'm allowing extra time so that counsel can meet to review the situation and to decide how the parties wish to proceed. She stood up. I am also available if counsel wish to meet with me for any reason. Otherwise, I'll see you all back here at 1:30 sharp. Have a pleasant and productive lunch. She turned and walked out of the room. Blackburn stood and said, Personally, I'd like to meet with opposing counsel right now. Sanders glanced over at Fernandez. Fernandez gave the faintest of smiles.
I'm amenable to that, Mr. Blackburn, she said.
The three lawyers stood beside the fountain. Fernandez was talking animatedly to Heller, their heads close together. Blackburn was a few paces away, a cellular phone pressed to his ear. Across the courtyard, Meredith Johnson talked on another phone, gesturing angrily as she talked. Sanders stood off to one side by himself and watched. There was no question in his mind that Blackburn would seek a settlement. Piece by piece, Fernandez had torn Meredith Johnson's version apart, demonstrating that she had ordered her assistant to buy wine, to buy condoms, to lock the door when Sanders was there, and to cancel later appointments. Clearly, Meredith Johnson was not a supervisor surprised by a sexual overture. She had been planning it all afternoon. Her crucial reaction, her angry statement that, you can't leave me, had been overheard by the cleaning woman. And she had lied about the timing and motivation of her report to Blackburn. There could be no doubt in anyone's mind that Meredith was lying. The only question now was what Blackburn and Digicom would do about it. Sanders had sat through enough management sensitivity seminars on sexual harassment to know what the company's obligation was. They really had no choice. They would have to fire her. But what would they do about Sanders? That was another question entirely. He had the strong intuition that by bringing this accusation, he had burned his bridges at the company. He would never be welcomed back. Sanders had shot down Garvin's pet bird, and Garvin would not forgive him for it. So, they wouldn't let him back. They would have to pay him off. They're calling it quits already, huh?
Sanders turned and saw Allen, one of the investigators, coming up from the parking lot. Allen had glanced over at the lawyers and quickly appraised the situation.
"I think so," Sanders said.
Allen squinted at the lawyers. "They should. Johnson has a problem, and a lot of people in the company know about it, especially her assistant."
Sanders said, "You talked to her last night?"
"Yeah," he said. "Herb found the cleaning woman and got her taped. And I had a late night with Betsy Ross. She's a lonely lady here in a new town. She drinks too much, and I taped it all."
"Did she know that?"
"She doesn't have to," Allen said. "It's still admissible."
He watched the lawyers for a moment.
"Blackburn must be shitting staples about now."
Luis Fernandez was stalking across the courtyard, grim-faced, hunched over.
"God damn it," she said as she came up.
"What happened?" Sanders said.
Fernandez shook her head.
"They won't make a deal."
"They won't make a deal?"
"That's right. They just deny every point. Her assistant bought wine? That was for Sanders. Her assistant bought condoms? That was for the assistant. The assistant says she bought them for Johnson? The assistant is an unreliable drunk. The cleaning lady's report? She couldn't know what she heard. She had the radio on. And always the constant refrain, 'You know, Louise, this won't stand up in court.' And bulletproof Betty is on the phone running the whole thing, telling everybody what to do."
Fernandez swore.
"I have to tell you, this is the kind of shit male executives pull. They look you right in the eye and say, 'It never happened. It just isn't there. You have no case.' It burns my ass. Damn it."
"Better get some lunch, Louise," Allen said. To Sanders, he said, "She sometimes forgets to eat."
"Yeah, fine. Sure. Eat."
They started toward the parking lot. She was walking fast, shaking her head.
"I can't understand how they can take this position," she said. "Because I know, I could see it in Judge Murphy's eyes, that she didn't think there'd be an afternoon session at all. Judge Murphy heard the evidence and concluded it's all over. So did I. But it's not over. Blackburn and Heller aren't moving one inch. They're not going to settle. They're basically inviting us to sue."
"So we'll sue," Sanders said, shrugging.
"Not if we're smart," Fernandez said. "Not now. This is exactly what I was afraid would happen. They got a lot of free discovery, and we got nothing. We're back to square one, and they have the next 3 years to work on that assistant, and that cleaning lady, and anything else we come up with. And let me tell you, in 3 years we won't even be able to find that assistant."
"But we have her on tape."
"She still has to appear in court, and believe me, she never will. Look, Digicom has huge exposure. If we show that Digicom didn't respond in a timely and adequate fashion to what they knew about Johnson, they could be liable for extremely large damages. There was a case on point last month in California. $19.4 million found for the plaintiff. With exposure like that, take my word for it, the assistant will be unavailable. She'll be on vacation in Costa Rica for the rest of her life."
"So, what do we do?" Sanders said.
"For better or worse, we're committed now. We've taken this line, and we have to continue it. Somehow, we have to force them to come to terms," she said. "But we're going to need something else to do that. You got anything else?"
Sanders shook his head.
"No, nothing." "Hell," Fernandez said. "What's going on? I thought Digicom was worried about this allegation becoming public before they finished the acquisition. I thought they had a publicity problem."
Sanders nodded. "I thought they did, too."
"Then there's something we don't understand, because Heller and Blackburn both act like they couldn't care less what we do. Now why is that?"
A heavy-set man with a mustache walked past them, carrying a sheaf of papers. He looked like a cop.
"Who's he?"
Fernandez said.
"Never seen him before." "They were calling on the phone for somebody, trying to locate somebody. That's why I ask."
Sanders shrugged. "What do we do now?"
"We eat," Allen said.
"Right, let's go eat," Fernandez said, "and forget it for a while."
In the same moment, a thought popped into his mind.
"Forget that phone."
It seemed to come from nowhere like a command.
"Forget that phone."
Walking beside him, Fernandez sighed.
"We still have things we can develop. It's not over yet.
You've still got things, right, Alan?
Absolutely, Alan said.
We've hardly begun. We haven't gotten to Johnson's husband yet, or to her previous employer. There's lots of stones left to turn over and see what crawls out.
Forget that phone.
I better check in with my office, Sanders said, and took out his cellular phone to dial Cindy. A light rain began to fall. They came to the cars in the parking lot. Fernandez said,
Who's going to drive?
I will, Alan said.
They went to his car, a plain Ford sedan. Alan unlocked the doors, and Fernandez started to get in.
And I thought that at lunch today, we would be going to have a party, she said. Going to a party?
Sanders looked at Fernandez sitting in the front seat behind the rain-spattered windshield. He held the phone up to his ear and waited while the call went through to Cindy. He was relieved that his phone was working correctly. Ever since Monday night, when it went dead, he hadn't trusted it completely. But it seemed to be fine. Nothing wrong with it at all.
The couple was going to a party, and she made a call on a cellular phone from the car. Forget that phone.
Cindy said, Mr. Sanders' office.
And when she called, she got an answering machine. She left a message on the answering machine, and then she hung up.
Hello? Mr. Sanders' office? Hello?
Cindy, it's me.
Oh, hi, Tom. Still reserved. Any messages? He said.
Yes, let me look at the book.
You had a call from Arthur in KL. He wanted to know if the drives arrived. I checked with Don Cherry's team. They got them. They're working on them now. And you had a call from Eddie in Austin. He sounded worried. And you had another call from John Levin. He called you yesterday, too, and he said it was important. Levin was the executive with a hard drive supplier. Whatever was on his mind, it could wait.
Okay. Thanks, Cindy.
Are you going to be back at the office today? A lot of people are asking.
I don't know.
John Conley from Conley White called. He wanted to meet with you at 4.
I don't know. I'll see. I'll call you later.
Okay. She hung up.
He heard a dial tone.
And then she had hung up.
The story tugged at the back of his mind. The two people in the car, going to the party.
Who had told him that story? How did it go?
On her way to the party, Adele had made a call from the car, and then she had hung up.
Sanders snapped his fingers. Of course. Adele. The couple in the car had been Mark and Adele Lewin, and they had had an embarrassing incident. It was starting to come back to him now.
Adele had called somebody and gotten the answering machine. She left a message and hung up the phone. Then she and Mark talked in the car about the person Adele had just called. They made jokes and unflattering comments for about 15 minutes, and later they were very embarrassed. Fernandez said,
Are you just going to stand there in the rain?
Sanders didn't answer. He took the cellular phone down from his ear. The keypad and screen glowed bright green. Plenty of power. He looked at the phone and waited. After 5 seconds, it clicked itself off. The screen went blank. That was because the new generation of phones had an auto-shutdown feature to conserve battery power. If you didn't use the phone or press the keypad for 15 seconds, the phone shut itself off, so it wouldn't go dead.
But his phone had gone dead in Meredith's office. Why? Forget that phone.
Why had his cellular phone failed to shut itself off? What possible explanation could there be? Mechanical problems. One of the keys stuck, keeping the phone on. It had been damaged when he dropped it, when Meredith first kissed him. The battery was low because he forgot to charge it the night before.
No, he thought. The phone was reliable. There was no mechanical fault, and it was fully charged. No. The phone had worked correctly.
They made jokes and unflattering comments for about 15 minutes. His mind began to race with scattered fragments of conversation coming back to him.
Listen, why didn't you call me last night?
I did, Mark.
Sanders was certain that he had called Mark Lewin from Meredith's office. Standing in the parking lot in the rain, he again pressed LEW on his keypad. The phone turned itself back on, the little screen flashing Lewin and Mark's home number.
There wasn't any message when I got home. I talked to your answering machine about 6:15. I never got a message. Sanders was sure that he had called Lewin and had talked to his answering machine. He remembered a man's voice saying the standard message. Leave a message when you hear the tone. Standing there with the phone in his hand, staring at Lewin's phone number, he pressed the send button. A moment later, the answering machine picked up. A woman's voice said, "Hi, you've reached Mark and Adele at home. We're not able to come to the phone right now, but if you leave a message, we'll call you back." Beep. That was a different message. He hadn't called Mark Lewin that night, which could only mean he hadn't pressed L-E-W that night. Nervous in Meredith's office, he must have pressed something else. He had gotten somebody else's answering machine. And his phone had gone dead. Because... forget that phone. "Jesus Christ," he said. He suddenly put it together. He knew exactly what had happened, and it meant that there was the chance that... "Tom, are you all right?" Fernandez said. "I'm fine," he said. "Just give me a minute. I think I've got something important." He hadn't pressed L-E-W. He had pressed something else. Something very close, probably one letter off. With fumbling fingers, Sanders pushed L-E-L. The screen stayed blank. He had no numbers stored for that combination. L-E-M. No number stored. L-E-S. No number stored. L-E-V. Bingo. Printed across the little screen was Levin. And a phone number for John Levin. Sanders had called John Levin's answering machine that night. John Levin called. He said it was important. I'll bet he did, Sanders thought. He remembered now, with sudden clarity, the exact sequence of events in Meredith's office. He had been talking on the phone, and she said, "Forget that phone," and pushed his hand down as she started kissing him. He had dropped the phone on the windowsill as they kissed and left it there. Later on, when he left Meredith's office, buttoning his shirt, he had picked up the cellular phone from the sill, but by then it was dead. Which could only mean that it had remained constantly on for almost an hour. It had remained on during the entire incident with Meredith. In the car, when Adele finished the call, she hung the phone back in the cradle. She didn't press the end button, so the phone line stayed open, and their entire conversation was recorded on the person's answering machine. 15 minutes of jokes and personal commentary, all recorded on his answering machine. And Sanders's phone had been dead because the line stayed open. The whole conversation had been recorded. Standing in the parking lot, he quickly dialed John Levin's number. Fernandez got out of the car and came over to him. "What's going on?" Fernandez said. "Are we going to lunch or what?" "Just a minute." The call went through. A click of the pickup, then a man's voice. "John Levin." "John, it's Tom Sanders."
"Well, hey there, Tomboy."
Levin burst out laughing. "My man, are you having a red-hot sex life these days, or what? I tell you, Tom, my ears were burning." Sanders said, "Was it recorded?"
"Jesus Christ, Tom, you better believe it. I came in Tuesday morning to check my messages, and I tell you, it went on for half an hour. I mean..."
"John."
"Whoever said married life was dull?"
"John, listen.
Did you keep it?"
There was a pause. Levin stopped laughing.
"Tom, what do you think I am, a pervert?" "Of course I kept it. I played it for the whole office. They loved it."
"John, seriously." Levin sighed.
"Yeah, I kept it. It sounded like you might be having a little trouble, and... I don't know. Anyway, I kept it."
"Good. Where is it?"
"Right here on my desk," Levin said.
"John, I want that tape. Now listen to me. This is what I want you to do." Driving in the car, Fernandez said, "I'm waiting." Sanders said, "There's a tape of the whole meeting with Meredith. It was all recorded."
"How?"
"It was an accident. I was talking to an answering machine," he said, "and when Meredith started kissing me, I put the phone down but didn't end the call. So the phone stayed connected to the answering machine, and everything we said went right onto the answering machine."
"Hot damn,"
Alan said, slapping the steering wheel as he drove. "This is an audio tape?" Fernandez said.
"Yes."
"Good quality?" "I don't know. We'll see. John's bringing it to lunch." Fernandez rubbed her hands together.
I feel better already.
Yes?
Yes, she said, because if it's any good at all, we can really draw blood.
John Levin, florid and jovial, pushed away his plate and drained the last of his beer.
Now that's what I call a meal. Excellent halibut.
Levin weighed nearly 300 pounds, and his belly pressed up against the edge of the table. They were sitting in a booth in the back room of McCormick and Schmick's on First Avenue. The restaurant was noisy, filled with the lunchtime business crowd. Fernandez pressed the headphones to her ear as she listened to the tape on a Walkman. She had been listening intently for more than half an hour, making notes on a yellow legal pad, her food still uneaten. Finally, she got up.
I have to make a call.
Levin glanced at Fernandez's plate.
Do you want that?
Fernandez shook her head and walked away. Levin grinned.
Waste not, want not,
he said, and pulled the plate in front of him. He began to eat.
So, Tom, are you in shit or what?
Deep shit, Sanders said.
He stirred a cappuccino. He hadn't been able to eat lunch. He watched Levin wolf down great bites of mashed potatoes.
I figured that,
Levin said.
Jack Carey over at Aldous called me this morning and said you were suing the company because you refused to jump some woman.
Carey is an asshole.
The worst, Levin nodded. The absolute worst. But what can you do? After Connie Walsh's column this morning, everybody's been trying to figure out who Mr. Piggy is.
Levin took another huge bite of food.
But how'd she get the story in the first place? I mean, she's the one who broke it.
Sanders said, maybe you told her, John.
Are you kidding?
Levin said. You had the tape. Levin frowned.
You keep this up, Tom. You're going to piss me off.
He shook his head.
No, you ask me. It was a woman who told her.
What woman knew? Only Meredith, and she wouldn't tell.
I'll bet you anything it'll turn out to be a woman, Levin said. If you ever find out. Which I doubt.
He chewed thoughtfully. Swordfish is a little rubbery. I think we should tell the waiter. He looked around the room.
Tom?
Yes.
There's a guy standing over there hopping from one foot to the other. I think maybe you know him.
Sanders looked over his shoulder. Bob Garvin was standing by the bar, looking at him expectantly. Phil Blackburn stood a few paces behind.
Excuse me, Sanders said, and he got up from the table.
Garvin shook hands with Sanders.
Tom, good to see you. How are you holding up with all this?
I'm okay, Sanders said.
Good, good.
Garvin placed his hand in a fatherly way on Sanders' shoulder.
It's nice to see you again.
Nice to see you too, Bob.
Garvin said,
there's a quiet place in the corner over there. I asked them for a couple of cappuccinos. We can talk for a minute. Is that okay?
That's fine, Sanders said.
He was well acquainted with the profane, angry Garvin. This cautious, polite Garvin made him uneasy. They sat in the corner of the bar. Garvin settled into his chair and faced him.
Well, Tom, we go way back, you and I.
Yes, we do.
Those damn trips to Seoul, eating that crappy food, and your ass hurting like hell. You remember all that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, those were the days, Garvin said.
He was watching Sanders carefully.
Anyway, Tom, we know each other, so I'm not going to bullshit you.
Let me just put all the cards on the table, Garvin said.
We've got a problem here, and it's got to be solved before it turns into a real mess for everybody. I want to appeal to your better judgment about how we proceed from here.
My better judgment? Sanders said.
Yes, Garvin said. I'd like to look at this thing from all sides.
How many sides are there?
There are at least two, Garvin said with a smile. Look, Tom, I'm sure it's no secret that I've supported Meredith inside our company. I've always believed that she's got talent and the kind of executive vision that we want for the future. I've never seen her do anything before that would suggest otherwise. I know she's only human, but she's very talented, and I support her.
Uh-huh.
Now, perhaps in this case, perhaps it is true that she's made a mistake. I don't know.
Sanders said nothing. He just waited, staring at Garvin's face. Garvin was doing a convincing impression of an open-minded man. Sanders didn't buy it.
In fact, let's say she has, Garvin said. Let's say she did make a mistake.
She did, Bob, Sanders said firmly.
All right, let's say she did. An error of judgment, let's call it. An overstepping of bounds. The point is, Tom, faced with a situation like this, I still strongly support her.
Why?
Because she's a woman.
What does that have to do with it?
Well, women in business have traditionally been excluded from executive positions, Tom.
Meredith hasn't been excluded, Sanders said.
And after all, Garvin said, she's young.
She's not that young, Sanders said.
Sure she is. She's practically a college kid. She just got her MBA a couple of years ago.
Bob, Sanders said, Meredith Johnson's 35. She's not a kid at all. Garvin did not seem to hear that. He looked at Sanders sympathetically.
Tom, I can understand that you were disappointed about the job, he said. And I can understand that in your eyes, Meredith made a mistake in the way she approached you.
She didn't approach me, Bob. She jumped me.
Garvin showed a flash of irritation. You're no kid either, you know.
That's right, I'm not, Sanders said. But I am her employee.
And I know she holds you in the highest regard, Garvin said, settling back in his chair. As does everybody in the company, Tom. You're vital to our future. You know it. I know it. I want to keep our team together. And I keep coming back to the idea that we have to make allowances for women. We have to cut them a little slack.
But we're not talking about women, Sanders said. We're talking about one particular woman.
Tom.
And if a man had done what she did, you wouldn't be talking about cutting him slack. You'd fire him and throw him out on his ass.
Possibly so.
Well, that's the problem, Sanders said.
Garvin said, I'm not sure I follow you there, Tom. His tone carried a warning. Garvin didn't like being disagreed with. Over the years, as his company grew in wealth and success, Garvin had grown accustomed to deference. Now, approaching retirement, he expected obedience and agreement. We have an obligation to attain equality, Garvin said.
Fine, but equality means no special breaks, Sanders said. Equality means treating people the same. You're asking for inequality toward Meredith because you won't do what you would to a man. Fire him.
Garvin sighed. If it was a clear case, Tom, I would. But I understand this particular situation isn't so clear.
Sanders considered telling him about the tape. Something made him hold back. He said,
I think there is. But there are always differences of opinion on these matters, Garvin said, leaning across the bar. That's a fact, isn't it? Always a difference of opinion. Tom, look, what did she do that was so bad? I mean, really? She made a pass? Fine. You could have decided it was flattering. She's a beautiful woman, after all. There are worse things that could happen. A beautiful woman puts her hand on your knee. Or you could have just said, no, thank you. You could have handled it any number of ways. You're a grown-up. But this vindictiveness. Tom, I have to tell you, I'm surprised at you.
Sanders said, Bob, she broke the law.
That really remains to be seen, doesn't it? Garvin said. You can throw open your personal life for a jury to inspect, if that's what you want to do. I wouldn't want to do it myself, and I don't see that it helps anybody to take this into court. It's a no-win situation all around.
What are you saying?
You don't want to go to court, Tom.
Garvin's eyes were narrow, dangerous. Why not?
You just don't.
Garvin took a deep breath.
Look, let's stay on track here. I've talked to Meredith. She feels as I do that this thing has gotten out of hand.
Uh-huh.
And I'm talking to you now, too, because my hope, Tom, is that we can put this to rest and go back to the way things were. Now, hear me out, please. Go back to the way things were before this unfortunate misunderstanding happened. You stay at your job. Meredith stays at hers. You two continue to work together like civilized adults. You move forward and build the company, take it public,
and everybody makes a pile of money a year down the line. What's wrong with that?
Sanders felt something like relief and a sense of normalcy returning. He longed to escape from the lawyers and from the tension of the last 3 days. To sink back into the way things were seemed as appealing as a warm bath.
I mean, look at it this way, Tom. Right after this thing happened on Monday night, nobody blew the whistle. You didn't call anybody. Meredith didn't call anybody. I think you both wanted this thing to go away. Then there was an unfortunate mix-up the next day, and an argument that needn't have happened. If you'd been on time for the meeting, if you and Meredith had been in sync on the story, none of this would have happened. You two would still be working together, and whatever happened between you would remain your private business. Instead, we have this. It's all a big mistake, really, so why not just forget it and go forward? And get rich. Tom, what's wrong with that?
Nothing, Sanders said finally.
Good.
Except it won't work, Sanders said.
Why not?
A dozen answers flashed through his mind. Because she's not competent, because she's a snake, because she's a corporate player, all image, and this is a technical division that has to get out the product. Because she's a liar, because I have no respect for her, because she'll do it again, because she has no respect for me. Because you're not treating me fairly, because she's your pet, because you chose her over me, because...
Things have gone too far, he said.
Garvin stared at him.
Things can go back.
No, Bob, they can't.
Garvin leaned forward. His voice dropped. Listen, you little Ferengi pissant. I know exactly what's going on here. I took you in when you didn't know Bulkogi from bullshit. I gave you your start. I gave you help. I gave you opportunities all along the line. Now you want to play rough? Fine. You want to see the shit come down? Just fucking wait, Tom.
He stood up. Sanders said, Bob, you've never been willing to listen to reason on the subject of Meredith Johnson.
Oh, you think I have a problem with Meredith?
Garvin laughed harshly.
Listen, Tom, she was your girlfriend, but she was smart and independent, and you couldn't handle her. You were pissed when she dropped you. And now, all these years later, you're going to pay her back. That's what this is about. It has nothing to do with business ethics or breaking the law or sexual harassment or any other damned thing. It's personal and it's petty. And you're so full of shit your eyes are brown.
And he stalked out of the restaurant, pushing angrily past Blackburn. Blackburn remained behind for a moment, staring at Sanders, and then hurried after his boss. As Sanders walked back to his table, he passed a booth with several guys from Microsoft, including two major assholes from systems programming. Someone made a snorting pig sound.
Hey, Mr. Piggy,
said a low voice.
Suey, suey. Couldn't get it up, huh?
Sanders walked on a few paces, then turned back.
Hey, guys, he said. At least I'm not bending over and grabbing my ankles in late-night meetings with...
And he named a programming head at Microsoft. They all roared with laughter.
Whoa-ho! Mr. Piggy speaks. Oink, oink.
Sanders said, What are you guys doing in town anyway? They run short on KY Jelly in Redmond?
Whoa, the piggy is pissed.
They were doubled over, laughing like college kids. They had a big pitcher of beer on the table. One of them said, If Meredith Johnson pulled off her pants for me, I sure wouldn't call the police about it.
No way, Jose.
Service with a smile. Hard charger. Ladies first. Kajung, kajung.
They pounded the table, laughing. Sanders walked away. Outside the restaurant, Garvin paced back and forth angrily on the pavement. Blackburn stood with the phone at his ear.
Where is that fucking car?
Garvin said.
I don't know, Bob. I told him to wait.
I know, Bob. I'm trying to get him.
Christ almighty. The simplest things. Can't even get the fucking cars to work right.
Maybe he had to go to the bathroom.
So, how long does that take? Goddamn, Sanders, could you believe him?
No, I couldn't, Bob.
I just don't understand. He won't deal with me on this, and I'm bending over backward here. I offer him his job back. I offer him his stock back. I offer him everything. And what does he do? Jesus. He's not a team player, Bob. You got that right. And he's not willing to meet us. We've got to get him to come to the table. Yes, we do, Bob. He's not feeling it, Garvin said. That's the problem. The story ran this morning. It can't have made him happy. Well, he's not feeling it. Garvin paced again. There's the car, Blackburn said, pointing down the street. The Lincoln sedan was driving toward them. Finally, Garvin said. Now look, Phil, I'm tired of wasting time on Sanders. We tried being nice, and it didn't work. That's the long and the short of it. So what are we going to do to make him feel it?
I've been thinking about that, Phil said. What's Sanders doing? I mean, really doing? He's smearing Meredith, right?
Goddamn right.
He didn't hesitate to smear her.
He sure as hell didn't.
And it's not true what he's saying about her. But the thing about a smear is that it doesn't have to be true. It just has to be something people are willing to believe is true. So? So maybe Sanders needs to see what that feels like.
Like what feels like? What are you talking about? Blackburn stared thoughtfully at the approaching car.
I think that Tom's a violent man.
Oh, hell, Garvin said. He's not. I've known him for years. He's a pussycat.
No,
Blackburn said, rubbing his nose.
I disagree. I think he's violent. He was a football player in college. He's a rough-and-tumble sort of guy, plays football on the company team, knocks people around. He has a violent streak. Most men do, after all. Men are violent.
What kind of shit is this?
And you have to admit, he was violent to Meredith, Blackburn continued, shouting, yelling, pushing her, knocking her over. Sex and violence. A man out of control. He's much bigger than she is. Just stand them side by side. Anybody can see the difference. He's much bigger, much stronger. All you have to do is look, and you see he is a violent, abusive man. That nice exterior is just a cover. Sanders is one of those men who take out their hostility by beating up defenseless women. Garvin was silent. He squinted at Blackburn.
You'll never make this fly.
I think I can.
Nobody in their right mind'll buy it.
Blackburn said, I think somebody will.
Yeah? Who?
Somebody, Blackburn said.
The car pulled up to the curb. Garvin opened the door. Well, all I know, he said, is that we need to get him to negotiate. We need to apply pressure to bring him to the table. Blackburn said,
I think that can be arranged.
Garvin nodded. It's in your hands, Phil. Just make sure it happens. He got in the car. Blackburn got in the car after Garvin. Garvin said to the driver, Where the fuck have you been? The door slammed shut. The car drove off. Sanders drove with Fernandez in Allen's car back to the mediation center. Fernandez listened to Sanders's report of the conversation with Garvin, shaking her head.
You never should have seen him alone. He couldn't have behaved that way if I was there. Did he really say you have to make allowances for women?
Yes.
That's noble of him. He's found a virtuous reason why we should protect a harasser. It's a nice touch. Everyone should sit back and allow her to break the law because she's a woman. Very nice.
Sanders felt stronger hearing her words. The conversation with Garvin had rattled him. He knew that Fernandez was working on him, building him back up, but it worked anyway.
The whole conversation is ridiculous, Fernandez said. And then he threatened you?
Sanders nodded.
Forget it. It's just bluster.
You're sure?
Absolutely, she said. Just talk. But at least now you know why they say men just don't get it. Garvin gave you the same lines that every corporate guy has been giving for years. Look at it from the harasser's point of view. What did they do that was so wrong? Let bygones be bygones. Everybody just go back to work. We'll be one big happy family again.
Incredible, Allen said, driving the car.
It is, in this day and age, Fernandez said. You can't pull that stuff anymore. How old is Garvin, anyway?
Almost 60.
That helps explain it, but Blackburn should have told him it's completely unacceptable. According to the law, Garvin really doesn't have any choice. At a minimum, he has to transfer Johnson, not you. And almost certainly, he should fire her.
I don't think he will, Sanders said.
No, of course he won't.
She's his favorite, Sanders said.
More to the point, she's his vice president, Fernandez said. She stared out the window as they went up the hill toward the mediation center. You have to realize, all these decisions are about power. Sexual harassment is about power, and so is the company's resistance to dealing with it. Power protects power. And once a woman gets up in the power structure, she'll be protected by the structure, the same as a man. It's like the way doctors won't testify against other doctors. It doesn't matter if the doctor is a man or a woman. Doctors just don't want to testify against other doctors, period. And corporate executives don't want to investigate claims against other executives, male or female.
So it's just that women haven't had these jobs?
Yes, but they're starting to get them now. And now they can be as unfair as any man ever was.
Female chauvinist sows, Alan said.
Don't you start, Fernandez said.
Tell him the figures, Alan said.
What figures? Sanders said. About 5% of sexual harassment claims are brought by men against women. It's a relatively small figure, but then only 5% of corporate supervisors are women. So the figures suggest that women executives harass men in the same proportion as men harass women. And as more women get corporate jobs, the percentage of claims by men is going up. Because the fact is, harassment is a power issue. And power is neither male nor female. Whoever is behind the desk has the opportunity to abuse power, and women will take advantage as often as men. A case in point being the delightful Ms. Johnson, and her boss isn't firing her.
Garvin says it's because the situation isn't clear.
I'd say that tape is pretty damn clear, Fernandez said. She frowned. Did you tell him about the tape?
No.
Good. Then I think we can wrap this case up in the next 2 hours.
Alan pulled into the parking lot and parked the car. They all got out.
All right, Fernandez said. Let's see where we are with her significant others. Alan, we've still got her previous employer.
Conrad Computer. Right, we're on it.
And also the one before that?
Symantec.
Yes, and we have her husband.
I've got a call into CoStar for him.
And the internet business? A friend?
Working on it.
And we have her B-School and Vassar.
Right.
Recent history is most important. Focus on Conrad and the husband.
Okay, Alan said. Conrad's a problem because they supply systems to the government and the CIA. They gave me some song and dance about neutral reference policy and non-disclosure of prior employees.
Then get Harry to call them. He's good on negligent referral. He can shake them up if they continue to stonewall.
Okay, he may have to.
Alan got back in the car. Fernandez and Sanders started walking up to the mediation center. Sanders said,
You're checking her past companies?
Yes, other companies don't like to give damaging information on prior employees. For years, they would never give anything at all except the dates of employment. But now there's something called compelled self-publication and something called negligent referral. A company can be liable now for failing to reveal a problem with a past employee. So we can try to scare them. But in the end, they may not give us the damaging information we want.
How do you know they have damaging information to give?
Fernandez smiled. Because Johnson is a harasser. And with harassers, there's always a pattern. It's never the first time.
You think she's done this before?
Don't sound so disappointed, Fernandez said. What did you think? That she did all this because she thought you were so cute? I guarantee you she has done it before.
They walked past the fountains in the courtyard toward the door to the center building.
And now, Fernandez said, let's go cut Ms. Johnson to shreds.
Precisely at 1:30, Judge Murphy entered the mediation room. She looked at the 7 silent people sitting around the table and frowned.
Has opposing counsel met?
We have, Heller said.
With what result? Murphy said.
We have failed to reach a settlement, Heller said.
Very well, let's resume.
She sat down and opened her notepad. Is there further discussion relating to the morning session?
Yes, Your Honor, Fernandez said. I have some additional questions for Ms. Johnson.
Very well. Ms. Johnson? Meredith Johnson put on her glasses.
Actually, Your Honor, I would like to make a statement first.
All right.
I've been thinking about the morning session, Johnson said, speaking slowly and deliberately, and Mr. Sanders' account of the events of Monday night. And I've begun to feel that there may be a genuine misunderstanding here.
I see. Judge Murphy spoke absolutely without inflection. She stared at Meredith. All right.
When Tom first suggested a meeting at the end of the day, and when he suggested that we have some wine and talk over old times, I'm afraid I may have unconsciously responded to him in a way that he might not have intended.
Judge Murphy didn't move. Nobody was moving. The room was completely still.
I believe it is correct to say that I took him at his word and began to imagine a romantic interlude. And to be frank, I was not opposed to that possibility. Mr. Sanders and I had a very special relationship some years ago, and I remembered it as a very exciting relationship. So I believe it is fair to say that I was looking forward to our meeting, and that perhaps I had presumed that it would lead to an encounter, which I was, unconsciously, quite willing to have occur.
Alongside Meredith, Heller and Blackburn sat completely stone-faced, showing no reaction at all. The two female attorneys showed no reaction. This had all been worked out in advance, Sanders realized.
What was going on? Why was she changing her story?
Johnson cleared her throat, then continued in the same deliberate way.
I believe it is correct to say that I was a willing participant in all the events of the evening. And it may be that I was too forward, at one point, for Mr. Sanders' taste. In the heat of the moment, I may have overstepped the bounds of propriety and my position in the company. I think that's possible. After serious reflection, I find myself concluding that my own recollection of events and Mr. Sanders' recollection of events are in much closer agreement than I had earlier recognized.
There was a long silence. Judge Murphy said nothing. Meredith Johnson shifted in her chair, took her glasses off, then put them back on again. Ms. Johnson, Murphy said finally, do I understand you to say that you are now agreeing to Mr. Sanders' version of the events on Monday night?
In many respects, yes. Perhaps in most respects.
Sanders suddenly realized what had happened.
They knew about the tape.
But how could they know? Sanders himself had learned of it only 2 hours ago, and Levin had been out of his office having lunch with them, so Levin couldn't have told them. How could they know? And, Ms. Johnson, Murphy said, are you also agreeing to the charge of harassment by Mr. Sanders?
Not at all, Your Honor. No.
Then I'm not sure I understand. You've changed your story. You say you now agree that Mr. Sanders' version of the events is correct in most respects, but you do not agree that he has a claim against you?
No, Your Honor. As I said, I think it was all a misunderstanding.
A misunderstanding? Murphy repeated, with an incredulous look on her face.
Yes, Your Honor, and one in which Mr. Sanders played a very active role.
Ms. Johnson, according to Mr. Sanders, you initiated kissing over his protests. You pushed him down on the couch over his protests. You unzipped his trousers and removed his penis over his protests. And you removed your own clothing over his protests. Since Mr. Sanders is your employee and dependent on you for employment, it is difficult for me to comprehend why this is not a clear-cut and indisputable case of sexual harassment on your part.
I understand, Your Honor, Meredith Johnson said calmly. And I realize I have changed my story. But the reason I say it is a misunderstanding is that from the beginning, I genuinely believed that Mr. Sanders was seeking a sexual encounter with me, and that belief guided my actions. You do not agree that you harassed him?
No, Your Honor, because I thought I had clear physical indications that Mr. Sanders was a willing participant. At times, he certainly took the lead. So now I have to ask myself why he would take the lead and then so suddenly withdraw. I don't know why he did that, but I believe he shares responsibility for what happened. That is why I feel that, at the very least, we had a genuine misunderstanding. And I want to say that I am sorry, truly, deeply sorry, for my part in this misunderstanding.
You're sorry? Murphy looked around the room in exasperation. Can anyone explain to me what is going on, Mr. Heller?
Heller spread his hands. Your Honor, my client told me what she intended to do here. I consider it a very brave act. She is a true seeker after truth.
Oh, spare me, Fernandez said.
Judge Murphy said, Miss Fernandez, considering this radically different statement from Miss Johnson, would you like a recess before you proceed with your questions?
No, Your Honor, I am prepared to go forward now, Fernandez said.
I see, Murphy said, puzzled. All right, fine. Judge Murphy clearly felt that there was something everyone else in the room knew that she didn't. Sanders was still wondering how Meredith knew about the tape. He looked over at Phil Blackburn, who sat at one end of the table, his cellular phone before him. He was rubbing the phone nervously.
Phone records, Sanders thought. That must be it. Digicom would have had somebody, most probably Gary Bosak, going through all of Sanders' records, looking for things to use against him. Bosak would have checked all the calls made on Sanders' cellular phone. When he did that, he would have discovered a call that lasted 45 minutes on Monday night. It would stand out, a whopping big duration and charge. And Bosak must have looked at the time of the call and figured out what had happened. He'd realized that Sanders hadn't been talking on the phone during that particular 45 minutes on Monday night. Therefore, there could only be one explanation. The call was running to an answering machine, which meant there was a tape. And Johnson knew it and had adjusted her story accordingly. That was what made her change.
Miss Johnson, Fernandez said, let's clear up a few factual points first. Are you now saying that you did send your assistant to buy wine and condoms, that you did tell her to lock the door, and that you did cancel your 7 o'clock appointment in anticipation of a sexual encounter with Mr. Sanders?
Yes, I did.
In other words, you lied earlier.
I presented my point of view.
But we are not talking about a point of view. We are talking about facts. And given this set of facts, I'm curious to know why you feel that Mr. Sanders shares responsibility for what happened in that room Monday night.
Because I felt that Mr. Sanders had come to my office with the clear intention of having sex with me, and he later denied any such intention. I felt he had set me up. He led me on and then accused me when I had done nothing more than simply respond to him.
You feel he set you up?
Yes.
And that's why you feel he shares responsibility?
Yes.
In what way did he set you up?
Well, I think it's obvious. Things had gone very far along when he suddenly got off the couch and said he was not going to proceed. I'd say that was a setup.
Why?
Because you can't go so far and then just stop. That's obviously a hostile act intended to embarrass and humiliate me. I mean, anyone can see that.
All right, let's review that particular moment in detail, Fernandez said. As I understand it, we're talking about the time you were on the couch with Mr. Sanders, with both of you in a state of partial undress. Mr. Sanders was crouched on his knees on the couch. His penis was exposed, and you were lying on your back with your panties removed and your legs spread. Is that correct?
Basically, yes.
She shook her head.
You make it sound so crude.
But that was the situation at that moment, was it not?
Yes, it was.
Now, at that moment, did you say, no, no, please? And did Mr. Sanders reply,
you're right. We shouldn't be doing this, and then get off the couch?
Yes, she said. That's what he said.
Then what was the misunderstanding?
When I said, no, no, I meant, no, don't wait. Because he was waiting, sort of teasing me, and I wanted him to go ahead. Instead, he got off the couch, which made me very angry.
Why?
Because I wanted him to do it.
But, Miss Johnson, you said, no, no.
I know what I said, she replied irritably, but in that situation, it's perfectly clear what I was really saying to him.
Is it?
Of course, he knew exactly what I was saying to him, but he chose to ignore it.
Miss Johnson, have you ever heard the phrase, no means no?
Of course, but in this situation.
I'm sorry, Miss Johnson, does no mean no or not?
Not in this case, because at that time, lying on that couch, it was absolutely clear what I was really saying to him.
You mean it was clear to you?
Johnson became openly angry. It was clear to him, too, she snapped.
Miss Johnson, when men are told that no means no, what does that mean?
I don't know. She threw up her hands in irritation. I don't know what you're trying to say.
I'm trying to say that men are being told that they must take women at their literal word, that no means no, that men cannot assume that no means maybe or yes.
But in this particular situation, with all our clothes off, when things had gone so far...
What does that have to do with it? Fernandez said.
Oh, come off it, Johnson said. When people are getting together, they begin with little touches, then little kisses, then a little petting, then some more petting. Then the clothes come off, and you're touching various private parts and so on. And pretty soon you have an expectation about what's going to happen. And you don't turn back. To turn back is a hostile act. That's what he did. He set me up.
Miss Johnson, isn't it true that women claim the right to turn back at any point, up to the moment of actual penetration? Don't women claim the unequivocal right to change their minds?
Yes, but in this instance...
Miss Johnson, if women have the right to change their minds, don't men as well? Can't Mr. Sanders change his mind?
It was a hostile act.
Her face had a fixed, stubborn look.
He set me up.
I'm asking whether Mr. Sanders has the same rights as a woman in this situation. Whether he has the right to withdraw, even at the last moment.
No.
Why?
Because men are different.
How are they different?
Oh, for Christ's sake, Johnson said angrily. What are we talking about here? This is Alice in Wonderland. Men and women are different. Everybody knows that. Men can't control their impulses.
Apparently Mr. Sanders could.
Yes, as a hostile act, out of his desire to humiliate me.
But what Mr. Sanders actually said at the time was, I don't feel good about this.
Isn't that true? I don't remember his exact words, but his behavior was very hostile and degrading toward me as a woman.
Let's consider, Fernandez said, who was hostile and degrading toward whom? Didn't Mr. Sanders protest the way things were going earlier in the evening?
Not really. No.
I thought he had.
Fernandez looked at her notes.
Early on, did you say to Mr. Sanders, you look good, and you always had a nice hard tush?
I don't know. I might have. I don't remember.
And what did he reply?
I don't remember.
Fernandez said, now, when Mr. Sanders was talking on the phone, did you come up, push it out of his hand, and say, forget that phone?
I might have. I don't really remember.
And did you initiate kissing at that point?
I'm not really sure. I don't think so.
Well, let's see. How else could it have occurred? Mr. Sanders was talking on his cellular phone over by the window. You were on another phone at your desk. Did he interrupt his call, set down his phone, come over, and start kissing you?
She paused for a moment.
No. Then who initiated the kissing?
I guess I did.
And when he protested and said, Meredith, did you ignore him, press on and say, God, I've wanted you all day, I'm so hot I haven't had a decent fuck?
Fernandez repeated these statements in a flat, uninflected monotone, as if reading from a transcript. I may have. I think that might be accurate. Yes.
Fernandez looked again at her notes.
And then, when he said, "Meredith, wait," again clearly speaking in a tone of protest, did you say, "Oh, don't talk. No, no. Oh, Jesus?"
I think possibly I did.
On reflection, would you say these comments by Mr. Sanders were protests that you ignored?
If they were, they were not very clear protests. No.
Miss Johnson, would you characterize Mr. Sanders as fully enthusiastic throughout the encounter?
Johnson hesitated a moment. Sanders could almost see her thinking, trying to decide how much the tape would reveal. Finally, she said,
"He was enthusiastic sometimes, not so much at other times. That's my point. Would you say he was ambivalent?"
"Possibly.
Somewhat."
"Is that a yes or a no, Miss Johnson?"
"Yes."
"All right. So Mr. Sanders was ambivalent throughout the session. He's told us why. Because he was being asked to embark on an office affair with an old girlfriend who was now his boss, and because he was now married. Would you consider those valid reasons for ambivalence?"
"I suppose so."
"And in this state of ambivalence, Mr. Sanders was overwhelmed at the last moment with the feeling that he didn't want to go forward, and he told you how he felt simply and directly. So why would you characterize that as a setup? I think we have ample evidence that it is just the opposite. An uncalculated, rather desperate human response to a situation which you entirely controlled. This was not a reunion of old lovers, Miss Johnson, though you prefer to think it was. This was not a meeting of equals at all. The fact is, you are his superior, and you controlled every aspect of the meeting. You arranged the time, bought the wine, bought the condoms, locked the door, and then you blamed your employee when he failed to please you. That is how you continue to behave now."
"And you're trying to put his behavior in a good light," Johnson said.
"But what I'm saying is that as a practical matter, waiting to the last minute to stop makes people very angry."
"Yes," Fernandez said. "That's how many men feel when women withdraw at the last minute. But women say a man has no right to be angry because a woman can withdraw at any time. Isn't that true?"
Johnson wrapped her fingers on the table irritably.
"Look," she said, "you're trying to make some kind of federal case here by trying to obscure basic facts. What did I do that was so wrong? I made him an offer, that's all. If Mr. Sanders wasn't interested, all he had to do was say no. But he never said that, not once, because he intended to set me up. He's angry he didn't get the job, and he's retaliating the only way he can, by smearing me. This is nothing but guerrilla warfare and character assassination. I'm a successful woman in business, and he resents my success, and he's out to get me. You're saying all kinds of things to avoid that central and unavoidable fact."
"Miss Johnson, the central and unavoidable fact is that you're Mr. Sanders' superior, and your behavior toward him was illegal, and it is, in fact, a federal case." There was a short silence. Blackburn's assistant came into the room and handed him a note. Blackburn read the note and passed it to Heller. Murphy said, "Miss Fernandez, are you ready to explain what's going on to me now?"
"Yes, Your Honor. It turns out there is an audio tape of the meeting."
"Really? Have you heard it?"
"I have, Your Honor. It confirms Mr. Sanders' story."
"Are you aware of this tape, Ms. Johnson?"
"No, I am not."
"Perhaps Ms. Johnson and her attorney would like to hear it, too. Perhaps we should all hear it," Murphy said, looking directly at Blackburn. Heller put the note in his pocket and said, "Your Honor, I'd like to request a 10-minute recess."
"Very well, Mr. Heller. I'd say this development warrants it."
Outside in the courtyard, black clouds hung low. It was threatening to rain again. Over by the fountains, Johnson huddled with Heller and Blackburn. Fernandez watched them.
"I just don't understand this," she said. "There they all are, talking again. What is there to talk about? Their client lied and then changed her story. There's no question that Johnson's guilty of sexual harassment. We have it recorded on tape.
So what are they talking about?
Fernandez stared for a moment, frowning.
You know, I have to admit it. Johnson's a hell of a smart woman, she said.
Yes, Sanders said.
She's quick and she's cool.
Uh-huh.
Moved up the corporate ladder fast.
Yes.
So, how'd she let herself get into this situation?
What do you mean? Sanders said.
I mean, what's she doing coming on to you the very first day at work, and coming on so strongly, leaving herself open to all these problems? She's too smart for that.
Sanders shrugged.
You think it's just because you're irresistible? Fernandez said. With all due respect, I doubt it.
He found himself thinking of the time he first knew Meredith, when she was doing demos, and the way she used to cross her legs whenever she was asked a question she couldn't answer.
She could always use sex to distract people. She's good at that.
I believe it, Fernandez said.
So what is she distracting us from now?
Sanders had no answer, but his instinct was that something else was going on.
Who knows how people really are in private, he said.
I once knew this woman. She looked like an angel, but she liked bikers to beat her up.
Uh-huh, Fernandez said. That's fine. I'm not buying it for Johnson, because Johnson strikes me as very controlled, and her behavior with you was not controlled.
You said it yourself. There's a pattern.
Yeah, maybe. But why the first day? Why right away? I think she had another reason.
Sanders said, and what about me? Do you think I had another reason?
I assume you did, she said, looking at him seriously. But we'll talk about that later.
Alan came up from the parking lot, shaking his head.
What have you got? Fernandez said.
Nothing good. We're striking out everywhere, he said. He flipped open his notepad. Okay, now we've checked out that internet address. The message originated in the U District. And a friend turns out to be Dr. Arthur A. Friend. He's a professor of inorganic chemistry at the University of Washington. That name mean anything to you?
No, Sanders said.
I'm not surprised. At the moment, Professor Friend is in northern Nepal on a consulting job for the Nepalese government. He's been there for 3 weeks. He's not expected back until late July. So it probably isn't him sending the messages anyway.
Somebody's using his internet address?
His assistant says that's impossible. His office is locked while he's away, and nobody goes in there except her. So nobody has access to his computer terminal. The assistant says she goes in once a day and answers Dr. Friend's email, but otherwise the computer is off. And nobody knows the password but her. So, I don't know.
It's a message coming out of a locked office, Sanders said, frowning.
I don't know. We're still working on it, but for the moment, it's a mystery.
All right, fine, Fernandez said. What about Conrad Computer?
Conrad has taken a very hard position. They will only release information to the hiring company, meaning Digicom. Nothing to us. And they say that the hiring company has not requested it. When we pushed, Conrad called Digicom themselves, and Digicom told them they weren't interested in any information Conrad might have. Next, the husband, Alan said. I talked to someone who worked in his company, CoStar. Says the husband hates her, has lots of bad things to say about her, but he's in Mexico on vacation with his new girlfriend until next week.
Too bad.
Novell, Alan said. They keep only the last 5 years current. Prior to that, records are in cold storage at headquarters in Utah. They have no idea what they'll show, but they're willing to get them out if we'll pay for it. It'll take 2 weeks.
Fernandez shook her head. Not good.
No.
I have a strong feeling that Conrad Computer is sitting on something, Fernandez said.
Maybe, but we'll have to sue to get it, and there's no time. Alan looked across the courtyard at the others. What's happening now?
Nothing. They're hanging tough.
Still?
Yeah.
Jesus, Alan said. Who's she got behind her?
I'd love to know, Fernandez said.
Sanders flipped open his cellular phone and checked in with his office. Cindy, any messages?
Just two, Tom.
Stephanie Kaplan asked if she could meet with you today.
She say why?
No, but she said it wasn't important, and Marianne has come by twice looking for you.
Probably wants to skin me, Sanders said.
I don't think so, Tom. She's about the only one who... She's very concerned about you, I think.
Okay, I'll call her. He started to dial Marianne's number when Fernandez nudged him in the ribs. He looked over and saw a slender, middle-aged woman walking up from the parking lot toward them.
Buckle up, Fernandez said.
Why? Who's that?
That, Fernandez said, is Connie Walsh.
Connie Walsh was about 45 years old, with gray hair and a sour expression.
Are you Tom Sanders?
That's right. She pulled out a tape recorder.
Connie Walsh from the Post Intelligence, sir.
Can we talk for a moment?
Absolutely not, Fernandez said.
Walsh looked over at her.
I'm Mr. Sanders' attorney.
I know who you are, Walsh said, and turned back to Sanders. Mr. Sanders, our paper's going with a story on this discrimination suit at Digicom. My sources tell me that you are accusing Meredith Johnson of sex discrimination. Is that correct?
He has no comment, Fernandez said, stepping between Walsh and Sanders.
Walsh looked past her shoulder and said, Mr. Sanders, is it also true that you and she are old lovers, and that your accusation is a way to even the score?
He has no comment, Fernandez said.
It looks to me like he does, Walsh said. Mr. Sanders, you don't have to listen to her. You can say something if you want to. And I really think you should take this opportunity to defend yourself, because my sources are also saying that you physically abused Ms. Johnson in the course of your meeting. These are very serious charges people are making against you, and I imagine you'll want to respond. What do you have to say to her allegations? Did you physically abuse her? Sanders started to speak, but Fernandez shot him a warning glance and put her hand on his chest. She said to Walsh,
Has Ms. Johnson made these allegations to you? Because she was the only other one besides Mr. Sanders who was there.
I'm not free to say. I have the story from very well-informed sources.
Inside or outside the company?
I really can't say.
Ms. Walsh, Fernandez said, I am going to forbid Mr. Sanders to talk to you.
And you better check with the PI Council before you run any of these unsubstantiated allegations. They're not unsubstantiated. I have very reliable...
If there's any question in your counsel's mind, you might have her call Mr. Blackburn, and he will explain what your legal position is in this matter.
Walsh smiled bleakly. Mr. Sanders, do you want to make a comment?
Fernandez said, Just check with your counsel, Ms. Walsh.
I will, but it won't matter. You can't squash this. Mr. Blackburn can't squash this. And speaking personally, I have to say I don't know how you can defend a case like this.
Fernandez leaned close to her, smiled, and said, Why don't you step over here with me, and I'll explain something to you.
She walked with Walsh a few yards away, across the courtyard. Allen and Sanders remained where they were. Allen sighed. He said, Wouldn't you give anything to know what they were saying right now? Connie Walsh said, It doesn't matter what you say. I won't give you my source.
I'm not asking for your source. I'm simply informing you that your story is wrong.
Of course you'd say that.
And that there's documentary evidence that it's wrong.
Connie Walsh paused. She frowned. Documentary evidence?
Fernandez nodded slowly. That's right.
Walsh thought it over. But there can't be, she said. You said it yourself. They were alone in the room. It's his word against hers. There's no documentary evidence.
Fernandez shook her head and said nothing.
What is it? A tape?
Fernandez smiled thinly. I really can't say.
Even if there is, what can it show? That she pinched his butt a little? She made a couple of jokes? What's the big deal? Men have been doing that for hundreds of years.
That's not the issue in this.
Give me a break. So this guy gets a little pinch and he starts screaming bloody murder. That's not normal behavior in a man. This guy obviously hates and demeans women. That's clear just to look at him. And there's no question, he hit her in that meeting. The company had to call a doctor to examine her for a concussion.
and I have several reliable sources that tell me he's known to be physically abusive. He and his wife have had trouble for years. In fact, she's left town with the kids and is going to file for divorce. Walsh was watching Fernandez carefully as she said it. Fernandez just shrugged. It's a fact. The wife has left town, Walsh said flatly. Unexpectedly, she took the kids, and nobody knows where she went. Now, you tell me what that means.
Fernandez said, Connie, all I can do is advise you in my capacity as Mr. Sanders' attorney that documentary evidence contradicts your sources about this harassment charge.
Are you going to show me this evidence?
Absolutely not.
Then how do I know it exists?
You don't. You only know I have informed you of its existence.
And what if I don't believe you?
Fernandez smiled. These are the decisions a journalist must make.
You're saying it'd be reckless disregard.
If you go with your story, yes.
Walsh stepped back. Look, maybe you've got some kind of a technical legal case here, and maybe you don't. But as far as I'm concerned, you're just another minority woman trying to get ahead with the patriarchy by getting down on her knees. If you had any self-respect, you wouldn't be doing their dirty work for them.
Actually, Connie, the person who seems to be caught in the grip of the patriarchy is you.
That's a lot of crap, Walsh said, and let me tell you, you're not going to evade the facts here. He led her on, and then he beat her up. He's an ex-lover, he's resentful, and he's violent. He's a typical man. And let me tell you, before I'm through, he'll wish he had never been born.
Sanders said, Is she going to run the story?
No, Fernandez said. She stared across the courtyard at Johnson, Heller, and Blackburn. Connie Walsh had gone over to Blackburn and was talking to him.
Don't get distracted by this, Fernandez said. It's not important. The main issue is, what are they going to do about Johnson?
A moment later, Heller came toward them. He said, We've been going over things on our side, Louise.
And?
We've concluded that we see no purpose to further mediation and are withdrawing as of now. I've informed Judge Murphy that we will not continue.
Really? And what about the tape?
Neither Miss Johnson nor Mr. Sanders knew they were being taped. Under law, one party must know the interaction is being recorded. Therefore, the tape is inadmissible.
But, Ben,
we argue that the tape should be disallowed, both from this mediation and from any subsequent legal proceeding. We argue that Miss Johnson's characterization of the meeting as a misunderstanding between consenting adults is the correct one, and that Mr. Sanders bears a responsibility for that misunderstanding. He was an active participant, Louise. No way around it. He took her panties off. Nobody held a gun to his head. But since there was fault on both sides, the proper thing is for the two parties to shake hands, let go of all animosity, and return to work. Apparently Mr. Garvin has already proposed this to Mr. Sanders, and Mr. Sanders has refused. We believe that, under the circumstances, Mr. Sanders is acting unreasonably, and that if he does not reconsider in a timely manner, he should be fired for his refusal to show up for work.
Son of a bitch, Sanders said.
End of side 6. To continue, change side selector switch and turn the cassette over.